The name of the new book, Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House, is by New York Times bestselling author Craig Unger. In this work of investigative reporting, Unger reveals his 30-year deep dive into the secret collusion between Ronald Reagan's 1980 presidential campaign and Iran, taking readers inside his three-decade reporting odyssey, sharing never-before-seen documents and illuminates startling truths about what really happened in 1980. Again, the name of the book is Den of Spies, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Craig Unger to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
What started this, as I just mentioned in the introduction, a 30-year deep dive?
Well, I started investigating this more than 30 years ago. It's actually in 1991, actually. It's been a 33-year journey, if you can believe that. But this is a question of treason, really. And I think it's one of the, you know, one of the oldest cliches in the world is that those who don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And this is one of those dark chapters in American history that's been buried, that's been disputed, that's not been not fully accepted. And I wanted to get at the truth, which is, and I think I've really proved it here, I have documentation, that the Republicans secretly allied with the repressive theocracy of Iran. Remember, these were the people who were chanting death to America, and the Republicans were promising to blow them out to smithereens. But secretly, during the 1980 elections, they made a treasonous deal with Iran, saying, we will send you weapons, and the Republicans did, in return for which they wanted Iran not to release the American hostages, but to prolong their incarceration until after the election, because that would help Ronald Reagan's chances of beating Jimmy Carter.
So let us begin with a couple of the characters in this story, beginning with William Casey, who was the Reagan-Bush campaign manager who later served as the head of the CIA. So tell us how he comes into this as not only as the campaign manager, but working on a covert operation.
Right. Well, Casey's a remarkable figure. I think he's probably the greatest spy in American history. And in some ways, he's sort of a combination of James Bond and Mr. Magoo. He would bit when he talked. His manners were horrible. He seemed to be going in a dozen different directions at once. But he was actually a brilliant, brilliant spy master. And during World War II, he'd been terrific in overseeing American operations against the Nazis. But he'd not been particularly visible in the world of intelligence until he became head of the CIA back in 81, after Reagan won. During the 1980 presidential campaign, he was not only running the presidential campaign, he was running a secret covert operation and making deals with Iran. He had ties, I discovered, with Israeli military intelligence, so he was getting the latest details from them. He had new arms dealers all over the world, and he would have secret meetings with Iranians in Madrid and Paris to make a secret deal to prolong the detention of the American hostages.
So tell us a little bit about that network and how he was able to put together this network, of his experience, his background that brought him to be campaign manager, but then to have all of these ties that were able to do what you write about in the book.
Right. Well, as I say, back in World War II, he had been a great spy, and he was renowned for it. But that was in the OSS, and that sort of ended in 1945. After those years, he became a very successful lawyer. He became chairman. He served as chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission for a while. He was head of the Export-Import Bank. He was close to Richard Nixon. But he also had operatives all over the world. And one of his best friends was a man named John Shaheen, who was a very wealthy oil man. And I was able to he was used as Casey's cutout to meet with various political operatives. So they were able to get Iranian arms dealers to approach the Carter administration And these were two brothers, Cyrus Hashemi and Jamshid Hashemi. And they went to Jimmy Carter and said, we can help you get release of the 52 American hostages Iran has taken. And Carter didn't know it, but the Hashemi brothers were secretly working for Bill Casey. Carter's best chance at winning the election was to bring back those hostages just before the November elections in October. That's why it was known as the October surprise. And, of course, Carter couldn't possibly do it because Casey had made a deal with Iran, and Iran stuck with the Republicans.
Craig, I just want to take one step back and just for context of what you were talking about in the assembling of this network of double agents and cutouts, as you mentioned, and arms dealers and fixers. But he was starting to do that even before the hostage crisis, right?
Absolutely. I talked to the head of Israeli military and intelligence, who said he was meeting or communicating with Casey in 1979, 1980, at a time when Casey had no governmental position at all. It was only in late 1980 that he became Reagan's campaign manager. And, of course, that's not a governmental position. So, I mean, we're in the middle of a campaign right now, and it would be inappropriate, for example, if Trump's campaign was secretly meeting with Israeli intelligence or with the Iranians. And this is where you get into a genuine question of treason. That is, it's illegal for private citizens to interfere with American foreign policy, and that's exactly what Casey and the Reagan campaign were doing.
Was the sole reason, the sole purpose of this to get Ronald Reagan elected? Was that the only reason, or were there others?
It really was. There were reasons to arm Iran, and that it was seen to be in Iran was just being attacked by Iraq. This was the beginning of the Iran-Iraq war, and a lot of people didn't want Iraq to win. If Iraq had beaten Iran and taken over their oil supplies, suddenly you would have had Saddam Hussein as one of the great oil powers in the world. So there was a reason there, but it was completely inappropriate for the Republicans, who were not in office, to do this.
Craig Unger is our guest. The name of the book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. With that of, as you say, treason, you were at the an investigative reporter at Newsweek at the time, and I'm curious as to how you believe and how it appears that this was able to be covered up, that this was able to, for all practical purposes, not be fully unearthed until 30 years later.
Well, that's right. I first did a big article for Esquire magazine, and it got a lot of attention. So Newsweek hired me, presumably, to lead their investigation. And what happened, to my astonishment, is they shut it down. That is, everything that had been reported was sort of unreported, and it was the October surprise was discredited. I was discredited as a conspiracy nut. I was sued for libel. I won. It was just a nuisance suit from the president's national security advisor, Bud McFarlane. But I was tied up in court for years, so it became very hard to fully report this. And I think one of the reasons is, you know, one of the bane of my existence in journalism is known as access journalism. And by that, I mean is reporters sometimes are pretty much married to their sources. And if you have a big, powerful source like Henry Kissinger, and Kissinger happened to be a Newsweek reporter, a columnist back then, if you're tied to them, your career is golden because they can feed you all these tidbits. But the truth is you end up carrying water for them. And I think that's what happened to Newsweek, is it bought in to the glamour of the Reagan years, of the people at the top of the Reagan administration. It bought into Israeli disinformation. Israel played a key role in this in this covert action, and they did not want to be they did not want it to be uncovered. Israel, of course, Israel's greatest patron, of course, is the United States, and here they were interfering in the presidential election of their greatest patron. So I think those are the reasons it was really covered up.
How involved was the candidate, Ronald Reagan, and how involved even was George H.W. Bush, who became vice president, but also was with the CIA?
Right. Well, Reagan, there is an interesting case because, you know, he famously talked about his relationship with Bill Casey, and Casey was known for mumbling. In fact, his code name with the Secret Service was Mumbles. It was as if he had marbles in his mouth. So Reagan said, you know, I can never understand a word that Casey says, and you can ask him to repeat himself once. You can ask him to repeat himself a second time, but you really can't ask a third time. That's rude. So I just nod and smile, and you get an image of Reagan being filled in maybe on the broad strokes of what's going on, but not getting any of the details and just smiling. And it's really hard to know precisely how much he knew. George H.W. Bush was a different case, really. As you say, he had already been head of the CIA, and in his way, his own right, was a master in the world of intelligence. And it's hard to believe he didn't really know what was going on. At the same time, there's been widespread reports secondhand that he attended some of the key meetings for the October surprise at which the plot was hatched and finally sealed. But it's never been entirely verified to my satisfaction, and I remain a little agnostic as to whether he actually attended those meetings. But I think he had to be aware of what was going on.
Again, Craig Unger is our guest. The name of the book is Den of Spies. Take us to the rescue attempt that was made by the Carter administration. And what you write about in the book was, obviously, that was a failed attempt. But what you write about in the book is that there are allegations of sabotage.
There are allegations of sabotage, and I was able to obtain the unpublished memoirs of a great figure in the world of intelligence, a man named Mustafa Zine, who was an operative with the Palestinian Liberation Organization who frequently had contact with the CIA. And in his memoirs, he writes, this rescue attempt, it took place in April of 1980, the Carter administration had been negotiating with Iran for 3 or 4 months. They were making absolutely no progress. They were desperate to win the release of the hostages. And finally, they gave up on the negotiations and staged an elaborate rescue attempt that turned out to be a disaster. And it ended up with an aircraft carrier with 6 helicopters off the coast of Iran trying to rescue the hostages, and it ended with a crash in the Iranian desert that killed 8 American soldiers. So the whole thing was a disaster, and afterwards, that sort of sealed the fate of Jimmy Carter in the elections. He seemed to be nothing, a weak president, a failed president, someone who was unable to win the release of Americans who had been humiliated by the mullahs of Iran. And obviously, it was very much in the Republicans' interest to have this rescue attempt fail, and that's exactly what happened.
With that said, how accountable do you believe President Carter was, even at the time, for not knowing what was going on around him, that his administration did not know what was happening and to the level that it was happening?
Well, there's no question that it was a failure. At the same time, I think, you know, today is President Carter's 100th birthday. And I think he's not been given his due. And as a result of all this, he's been described repeatedly as a failed president who allowed Iran to humiliate America. The truth of the matter is, it was virtually impossible for him to succeed with the Republicans undermining him at every step of the way. And I think this is really an important chapter in American history. It's very dark. It's very ugly. We don't like to acknowledge it. But, you know, we have to acknowledge the dark chapters in our past, or they will happen again and again. And that's one of the things that's happened with this. I mean, the Republicans have interfered in our own presidential elections repeatedly. As I report, in 1968, during the Nixon-Humphrey election, Lyndon Johnson was president, was trying to end the war in Vietnam. And the Republicans interfered. Nixon sent a woman to persuade South Vietnam to get out of the Paris peace talks. And they did. And as the election neared, the war went on and the Democrats looked weak and embarrassed. So this kind of thing has happened repeatedly. And as we approach today's election, next month's election, we see Iranians have been indicted again for hacking, this time for hacking Trump's campaign. My view is, until we acknowledge the past, it will repeat itself again and again.
November 2nd, 1982, days before the U.S. presidential election, the Iranians were telling the Carter administration that there will be no deal on the hostages. Did they really think there would be?
I think by that late date, the Carter had almost given up. They had been so close so often, and it kept falling through, and they didn't understand why. And the real reason the Iranians kept backing out was because they were going through their own internal divisions. The president of Iran back then, Abu Hassan Banisadr, who I interviewed before his death, I interviewed him in 2016, he wanted to just release the hostages, Jimmy Carter. He thought it had been a mistake to seize the hostages. But he was embattled against the more hardline mullahs. Ayatollah Khomeini, you may recall, was demonized all the time in the United States. He was a militant Islamist fundamentalist. He called America the Great Satan. And oddly enough, the Republicans seemed allied with him and kept him in power. So Khomeini was able to triumph, and that meant that the hostages were not going to be released as long as Jimmy Carter was in power. In fact, you know, the hostages were released just minutes, literally minutes, after Ronald Reagan was on the podium being sworn into his presidency. He was literally still on the podium when the Iranian jets took off and started to return the hostages to the United States. And that should have been a tip-off to everyone in the country that this took place. Reagan had no ability to negotiate with Iran until the moment he was sworn in, and there he was on the podium, and he clearly wasn't talking to Iran. So a secret deal had to have been made.
When it comes to what we learn from this and what we know about what can happen today when it comes to foreign interests and their impact on our elections?
Well, we know a lot. I mean, we know, for example, we have a president, a former president, Donald Trump, who's very close to Bibi Netanyahu personally. He's very close to Vladimir Putin. He's close to MBS in Saudi Arabia, who invested $2 billion in Jared Kushner's equity funds. So those are very close relationships, and they want Trump to win. And as we look towards whether or not there will be an October surprise this time around, I think it's quite possible it could happen in a dozen different ways, and it's sort of hard to predict. But it has happened before. It's happened regularly. The Republicans have done it again and again. And I think it's very much something to watch out for between now and the election.
The name of the new book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason that Stole the White House. The book is published by Mariner. Craig Unger, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, Craig Unger is the best-selling author of 6 books on democracy, the former editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine, also a contributing editor for Vanity Fair, where he covered national security and foreign affairs for 15 years. The latest book, Den of Spies, is published by Mariner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.